I'm Craig Freeman, and welcome to Weekend Let's Hear It. Kalamazoo's music scene is rich with diversity, from jazz, classical, rock. On any given night, there's lots of different music to choose from. One thing all those musicians have in common is that at one point or another, they've probably studied with a private teacher, taken private lessons. My guest today is well-versed and adept, not only as a teacher, but as well as a consummate performer. His name is Keith Guyman. He plays the trumpet, and welcome. Thanks for being here, Keith.
Thanks, Craig. I appreciate you having me on.
It was wonderful having you. And we're joined also by accompanist and pianist extraordinaire, Tom Britton. I think we'll just start right into some music. So if you'd like to introduce your first tune and take it away.
Yeah, the first tune that we've chosen to play today is Venus Waltz, and it's by Herbert L. Clark, who was an American cornetist, soloist. It's a cute little character piece that I think you'll enjoy.
Thank you.
Nice. Those types of pieces are those show pieces? They have a very distinct format, it seems. So there's a theme and variations, and it kind of expands as you go along. Is that a good estimation of what happens? Can you explain that general style of piece?
The pieces are constructed, and this is one that I actually sometimes have some of my students learn. Herbert L. Clark is really known in the trumpet world. Most of the trumpet players I know when I was young struggle through his technical studies book and trying to learn all the finger patterns and work them up into certain speeds. He was really known for his virtuosity. And this piece is on the lighter side of some of the pieces that he's kind of written, but it just has a beautiful melody, you know, and it's that return of the melody, you know, towards the end that makes it nice for students because they don't have to keep learning new material. And it's just, besides the tricky cadenza kind of at the beginning, it's very accessible.
Yeah, it's a beautiful tune. That style of piece always reminds me of like the Carnival of Venice or the Bluebells of Scotland. It always starts with just a simple, beautiful tune. And I always go back to that section as being my favorite part of these huge show pieces that are just technical tour de forces, and you know, people can, sounds like they have batteries in their tongues, but
absolutely. We're just missing all the crazy variations here, but it is it's a beautiful piece.
Yeah. Getting back to maybe your background, or actually starting out with your background, I feel like everyone has a kooky story about how they picked their instrument or if it chose them. I know for me, I was supposed to play the trumpet, actually, and I went to the music store with my grandfather and saw the trombone on the wall and thought it looked weird and cool and decided, yeah, I'm gonna play that. And that's how I ended up playing trombone. Do you have some unique story, or is it what you were stuck with? And
no, it's really interesting. How I got to be the trumpet player or pick the trumpet as my instrument, I'm very unclear. You know, we got a chance to start band. I grew up in Maryland. In the school district I was in, we started in fourth grade. And trumpet is something I feel like I wanted to play. I don't remember the trying out process or that there was a moment that I was like, yeah, I want to be the trumpet player. I know that my uncle, who was a band director, he was a trumpet player. And so I started off on his student model trumpet. You know, was kind of taped together in spots, but it worked. And it was a great starting trumpet.
That's wonderful. You are one of those people that you don't fall in line with the typical trumpeter character trait, shall we say. And you're just a great, nice guy. And trumpet players are known to be, dare I say, cocky. Is that a fair assessment?
it's a character trait that sometimes goes with the trumpet. You know, the old joke is the trumpet player's handshake is, you know, you grab the person's hand and say, hi, I'm better than you. but that is certainly not really how I feel like I try to portray myself. You know, and it might go back to some of my upbringing, some of my story, you know. I grew up with a learning disability. I'm slightly dyslexic, and school was always a little bit hard for me, you know, the reading and the writing, especially, you know, spelling. And for whatever reason, music and band kind of made sense. And so I knew as, you know, a middle schooler, a seventh grader, that I wanted to do something in music.
Did it come natural to you, or did it just feel like home, or did it feel right? You know, having all these other probably difficult experiences as a student. Did music come easy to you?
I would say producing a tone on the trumpet was kind of natural. I haven't had to work as hard on that. But as for making sure that my reading of the music and understanding of the notes and rhythms and all the technique part, I really had to put in the work.
Yeah, there's no shortcut for that, is there? So you went to, is it Towson University?
Towson.
Sorry, tomato, tomato, I suppose. for your undergraduate degree?
Yep, I got my undergraduate degree in music education from Towson University, which is a state school in Maryland. Got to study with Phil Snedeker when I was there, who is a great, great trumpet player. I learned a lot from. And as I was there at Towson getting my degree, I actually spent the summers up in Bayview, Michigan, three of my summers during my undergraduate years, studying with Scott Thornburg from Western Michigan University. And that was a wonderful experience, having 2 months up in Northern Michigan, just beautiful in the summertime, getting a chance to practice and study with Scott, who's become a really good friend of mine and colleague, and just a real mentor.
And that brought you to Michigan.
Yeah, when I was looking at grad schools for performance, Western was definitely at the top of my list, and I was grateful enough that when I auditioned, I got offered the assistantship. And so it was, you know, to come here and be able to work a little bit in the music ed program for the undergrads and get my master's in performance and get to study with Scott Thornburg and, sadly, the late Dr. Stephen Jones, who just passed this week. He was definitely a big influence for me in my first year up here. I really enjoyed lessons with him. I mean, he was so passionate about trumpet playing and anything trumpet, you know. And he approached every lesson with such intensity and passion and really demanded the most from you. He certainly held me accountable for every beginning, middle, and end of every note, which I'm not sure every teacher has. I mean, it's getting all the right notes and rhythms and making phrases, but he had in his mind a particular way he wanted to hear everything and really challenged you to try to reach the idea that he had.
Yeah, that's it's great to hear your or I'm humbled to hear your remembrances of him, and it's probably still fresh in our minds as it happened very recently. Dr. Jones taught at Western from 1974, I believe, up until 2014, and an institution in the trumpet world, and even more so in our community. So,
absolutely, you know, he was at every trumpet event. You know, even after he retired from Western, you know, he was at recitals, at concerts. You know, he came out to hear Tom and I play when we were doing some of our summer concerts. He was always in the audience. He would be showing up, you know, when he was teaching high school students and middle school students to solo ensemble to support them. He was just always around, and not just in this community, but even, you know, internationally. He was a real big part of the International Trumpet Guild, and had gone to every convention, you know, that they had had. And so it's a real loss. And I'm still personally trying to come to terms with, you know, not being able to play with him and see him. You know, we just played a little bit before Easter. We played a gig together. And so it's a real shock to lose somebody that sudden and who was such an influence. I'd like to take a second, if you don't mind, to play a verse or two of Amazing Grace, just in remembrance of Dr. Jones.
I'd love to hear that.
Thank you.
I think often in difficult times, we often search for words to describe something, and music always seems to express that which we cannot, and that certainly is no exception, so thank you for that. So circling back to some more trumpet-related topics, and just you've really made a name for yourself as an educator in Kalamazoo. You have a very robust studio, to say the least, of students of many different ages. Is that correct?
It is. It keeps me very busy. I have a private studio of around 40 to 50 students, which is a lot to keep track of. I go out and work during the day at Gull Lake and Mattawan and pull kids out of band for lessons. I have a lot of students that come to the house. And I also teach over at Kalamazoo College. I'm their adjunct trumpet professor. So I think my youngest at the moment actually is a six-year-old that I'm teaching how to play the trumpet and read music for the first time. And my oldest is in his 20s and getting ready to do a senior recital this coming Saturday. So it really keeps me on my toes to try to motivate and encourage all the age groups.
Yeah. I wondered, as a music teacher, and since a lot of your students, it sounds like you stay with them or they study with you for quite a while, how much of your teaching is music, and how much of your teaching is life and all those other things that just surround, you know, being a good person? And we see, you know, our students for such a big chunk of time. I think we take that for granted sometimes, the effect that we can have on our students in a positive way. And I wondered if you had any insight on that, or if that's something that's in your teaching philosophy, or if that just happens naturally.
Absolutely. No. And I'm glad you brought that up. I feel so blessed to be able to do what I do. And especially having the one-on-one connection with the students. And music and learning music has so many crossovers with life lessons that I think is really important for students. And I absolutely try to plant seeds and try to give advice. You know, some of my students that have been with me a while, you know, ask sometimes for personal advice. You know, it's one of the things that really stuck with me in my education degree in undergrad was that if a student is feeling fear, or if they're hungry, or if they're super tired, or for whatever reason, if their basic needs aren't met, they're going to have a really hard time learning. And so I try to take the first few minutes of every lesson and just check in with the students, because a lot of times if they can get something off of their mind, you know, and just say that they're worried about a test that's coming up next hour if I'm in school, you know, it calms them down enough that then they can kind of focus on what we're trying to accomplish. And music, you know, it's an old art. And I tell my students that all the time. You know, we live in such an instantaneous society where we expect things to happen right away. And in learning music, it's time. You know, it's putting in some time. It's sitting with it. It's learning to fail and get back up and try it again and try it again. So many of my young students are so quick to label themselves, even as sixth graders, as either being able to do it or not do it after like the first week of playing. And I find it my job to try to get them to see things, you know, that it, you know, it might take you a little bit of time, but you're going to get there if you put in the work. And that's, you know, for me, I had to work harder, you know, than a lot of other students, in school. you know, I'd have friends that would write a paper in a half hour that might take me two. And so it was like, I'm used to kind of that grind and trying to instill that in my students, you know, and say, you know what, let's try it 20 times, you know, let's try those two measures 30 times, you know? And sometimes they look at me like I'm crazy. But it's like, you know, I might tell them, you know, go home and try to play that scale 50 times this week. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, because if you get to the point where you've done that many reps and you're really paying attention, you're going to get it. You know, it's going to get better with the practice.
There's so much value in the, I call them one percenters, those tiny little chunks that build up over time. And, you know, failing that many times has value. It sounds kind of silly, but, if you're approaching things the right way, there's always something to learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely. And one of my favorite quotes, and I actually, this is a funny story. I saw it on a bumper sticker for the first time when I was driving around probably 10 years ago, and it stuck with me. And if a student, you know, jokes around or asks me for, you know, advice, my one piece of advice, if I had to stick with just one, would don't believe everything you think. I saw that written on a bumper sticker, and I read it, and I was just like, wow, that is so true. Because, you know, there are thoughts that even go through my head as a professional that I'm not good enough. And, you know, I, as like everybody else, have to battle those thoughts. And it's like, well, no, that's not the truth, because not everything we think is the truth, especially when we're being critical of ourselves. And if I can help students kind of get that, you know, I think it's going to help them out in whatever they do, whether they become music majors or, you know, go into the business world or wherever their life leads them.
Yeah. Very, very sage advice. Let's have some more music. I think we could have some of that. Is there a tune that you would like to play now?
Yeah, I think one of a piece that Tom and I have played before that's really been kind of enjoyable is by the American composer George Gershwin. I don't get a chance to play jazz a lot, but I love to listen to it. This piece just has that mix of classical and jazz like Gershwin really likes, and it's his Summertime.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that.
Thanks. That's a piece that Tom and I have played on some of our summer concerts, and it's real fun to kind of just relax and let go.
You know, playing in these, we talk about different styles and playing in different genres. It brought to mind, again, all the different things that you do. So you're in chamber ensembles. You are a freelance musician and gigging with different symphonies. You teach.
You have a dog walking business.
No, just kidding.
Not that, but
how do you balance all of those different things that you do and prioritize? Is it a week to week basis? You know, you have to look at, okay, this is what I have to do this week, or is there a general philosophy that you have that, you know, this teaching will always be the most important thing? I just wondered how you balance all those things.
It's a great question. Sometimes I wonder that myself. You know, sometimes I feel like it's one day at a time, figuring out what I have to get through. But a lot of times I try to keep looking ahead. I live in two worlds. I live in teaching, and I live in the professional playing world. And to balance those is sometimes challenging. You know, my students and making sure that I see them on as regular basis as I can, you know, is really important to me. I play with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra Brass Quintet that goes out and does elementary school concerts on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And it's not every week. And so I try to, on weeks that I have to miss because of a school performance, my regular teaching students, I try to make them up and reorganize my schedule to get them lessons in, because I do think it's that regular, just like it's regular practice that kind of helps us get better. It's me checking in on them regularly really keeps them motivated to practice, you know. And then I've got, as for my personal practice, whatever concert or playing commitment is next, that's what gets my most attention. Just yesterday, I played with the Southwest Michigan Symphony because I'm third trumpet there. I'm second trumpet with the Battle Creek Symphony. I'll be playing, though, the principal part this weekend coming up. And then 2 weeks after that, I'll be playing with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. So I regularly have multiple concerts that I'm preparing for at one time. And, you know, what is coming up this week gets the majority of my practice. And then spreading out and looking ahead at, okay, this piece is really hard. I know that's going to take more practice time, and working that into my practice routine so that I'm really prepared when those rehearsals and the concerts come up.
It seems like you have to kind of triage things.
Absolutely. Yep. The most, you know, look at what is the most important thing to focus on. You know, I wish days would be longer, or maybe there would be an eighth day of the week to fit everything in, but I just kind of make it work. And I'm blessed that I can, because I really feel like when I'm on stage playing with one of the symphonies, or when I'm playing in the brass quintet, and I'm holding myself accountable as a professional musician, I feel like I am able to hold my students accountable. When I'm out there publicly performing, I can really take what I learned from those experiences and bring that into my teaching. And I tell students all the time, you know, I don't play perfect concerts, you know, and I get paid to play them. Because so many students are afraid of making even one mistake. They feel like they have to be perfect. And that's another lesson that I try to, you know, instill in them, is just do your best, you know. And there's going to be some mistakes in live performances, but we try to practice enough to eliminate those as much as possible.
You kind of remove yourself from the equation a little bit, and it's not about you, right? It's about the music, and you seem to have a very holistic Zen way of looking at things. You make it sound so easy.
I wish it was. It takes a lot of work, and there are times that, you know, I have to convince myself that you know, yes, I'm just as good as anybody else that I'm playing with to be on stage. And, you know, those mental demons that we sometimes fight against, of especially the one of not being good enough, is a hard one to kind of get through. But, you know, I try my hardest to stay grateful. You know, I am really able to make a living doing something I love, both teaching and performing, you know, and I have the best of both worlds, and I'm so very grateful. You know, when the 7:30 to 10 o'clock rehearsals are going on at night and I'm exhausted because I taught 13 students, I try to just look out into the empty hall and just think, you know, I've got one of the best seats in the house, you know. I kind of think of it as I'm sitting in the speaker. You know, yes, I'm actually part of playing, and I've got a job to do. But during my rests, it's like I get to sit inside the speaker and listen to the music and feel the vibrations. And it's really cool.
I love that analogy. That's a very cool way to look at it. I never thought of it that way before. That's great. So moving ahead, you are involved in something that is very near and dear to my heart as far as my development as a musician. And it goes back to, I believe it was my junior year of high school, I had the opportunity to take part in a music camp. And my band director kind of made a deal with me. I wanted to play an orchestra. And he said, okay, you can do that, but you have to go to a music camp this summer. And I'd never done that before. And I was getting pretty serious about trombone and decided, yeah, I just have to do it. And it was probably one of the most enriching experiences I've had as a musician, and being around that high caliber of musician, and everyone who's there wants to get better, and everyone is already good. And it was a fascinating experience. And I still look back to that summer as the summer that I got serious about playing my instrument. So you, alongside of Benji Daneman, another Kalamazoo Trumpet Institution, did you start the camp? You have a trumpet camp.
Yeah, we have the Kalamazoo Trumpet Workshop, and this will be our fifth summer. It's really hard to believe. But 5 years ago, Benji and I got together and decided to, you know, put together a summer workshop. And 5 years ago, we had a single day workshop for high school students and a single day workshop for middle school students. And it was really a whole lot of fun to bring lots of trumpet information to students who are interested in trumpet, but might not know. You know, I usually bring out my variety of trumpets, you know, and all the different keys of trumpets. And that surprises, especially some of the younger students that haven't seen a piccolo trumpet or an E-flat trumpet. And to be able to influence them and kind of inspire them with trumpet ensembles that they play in and workshops. And it's grown to where this year we have a 3-day workshop event, and the fourth night is our concert. And we even got a grant through the Arts Council of Greater Kalamazoo. And this year we're bringing Brandon Ridenour into town to work with the students. He's going to do some master classes and workshops with the students during the day. And then he's bringing two other people from New York with him, part of his founders group, which is a great new group with lots of new music. They write their own stuff, and they're going to be doing a free public concert in the evening on Tuesday, June 26th at 7 o'clock, the second day of our workshop. And it's just great to have the students see a trumpet player that, you know, grew up around here and that is making such a living and a name for himself as a trumpet player and a soloist. And so we're really excited to have him on board this year. And it's going to be a great event.
And to those who don't know, Brandon Ridenour is probably one of the big shots of trumpet. Would that be an understatement? He played with Canadian Brass, is that right?
He did. He spent a few years playing with a Canadian Brass and touring with them. He now lives in New York City and freelances as a soloist. And like I said, he has this founders group that he does a lot with. And he's just an amazing trumpet player who, like I said, grew up right here, went to Portage Northern. And so it's great to that he's willing to come back and work with the students.
It's so impactful to see someone playing your instrument at such a high caliber. Someone other than your own teacher as well. I remember the first time I saw a famous jazz harmonist, Slide Hampton, in person. And it just expands what you think is possible on your own instrument. And getting to be up close and personal with him, I'm sure that'll be a wonderful experience for your student.
Absolutely. You know, I can remember my grandmother actually taking me to the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, and it was just her and I, you know, that would go to some concerts. And, you know, I can't remember what they played, but it was so cool to be in the symphony hall and see the musicians on stage. And I can also remember, you know, the first time that I got to see Maynard Ferguson live. And as a middle school, you know, early high school kid, when that happened, I mean, it was incredible. It was just like, wow, especially, you know, at that age, you know, wow, how does he play so high? it was incredible. But those experiences, I think, really can stick with people. You know, the first concerts that they have or, you know, the first time they're in an ensemble of players that all want to be there. And so Benji and I, you know, he brings to the table a lot of education experience and a lot of jazz knowledge. And I bring to the table kind of the classical side. And so we've always tried to balance and get kids to see both the classical and jazz side of trumpet and to provide that during the workshop.
Yeah, that's great to have such a rich experience in two different genres like that. If someone would like to attend, is there an age limit to attend the camp? Is it capped at a certain grade level?
Right now, the workshop is, we focus on sixth graders that have just played kind of for a year through those that have just finished 12th grade. And this year, we're going to keep them on separate tracks where we actually have been working. Last year, we brought on board Beth Jonker, who's a band director over at Mattawan and another just phenomenal trumpet player and educator as well. And she's going to be leading the middle school, sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. And then we're going to have our high school group that Benji and I will kind of lead. And so there'll be separate workshops to make sure that they're getting information that one isn't too easy for them or two isn't over their head, and getting to play pieces that will challenge them but not feel like they can't get, you know, by the end of the 3 days. Because we, you know, we have 3 days that we rehearse them a lot. And then on that fourth night on Thursday, we'll put a public performance together of trumpet ensemble stuff. And it's really fun.
Wonderful. And the public concert will be held at where?
This year, the whole camp is going to be over at Kalamazoo College, which is, again, a first for us to kind of partner with them. And we're really excited about having the use of their facilities. But yeah, June 28th will be the final performance for the trumpet ensembles groups. And that will be at 6 p.m. And for those that might be interested or have grandkids that might be interested that are listening, you can find out more information at KalamazooTrumpetWorkshop.com, which is our website.
What a great experience. I'd love to, if your lips are willing, if we could end on one more tune.
Absolutely. Tom and I have pretty much always ended our concerts together that we do with What a Wonderful World. And just one of my favorite pieces. And it just kind of falls back on that, you know, being grateful. There's so much negativity we hear in the news and in the world. And I try to just take a step back, you know, and spring at the moment is one of the best times for me to do that, because things are just blossoming and flowering. And it's just, it is, you know, when we take a step back and look at it, it is a wonderful world that we live in.
That was a beautiful way to end things. I'd like to thank you for being here. I'd like to thank Thomas for being here as well and accompanying. I'd like to thank Martin Clem, our sound engineer. We're here in the WMUK Takeda studio. Keith, if people would like to find out more about you, do you have a website? And if people would like to find out more about the trumpet workshop, how could they do that?
Absolutely. For the trumpet workshop, our website is KalamazooTrumpetWorkshop.com. Really simple. For me personally, my website is trumpet-guru.com. Both websites, you know, you can find information, and if you have any questions about what I do or the trumpet workshop, you can contact me through either one.
Thank you so much. It's been great talking with you.
You too, Craig. Thanks for having me.